This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 169, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. You can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 160 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Tim Caney about his book, 3:43 AM, Awakenings of an Experiencer, a memoir of high strangeness, synchronicities, past lives, and otherworldly contact. Tim is a certified UFO investigator and holds professional certificates from the Centre of Excellence in the fields of ufology and cryptozoology. He worked from 2021 to 2023 with MUFON as both the field investigator and the state's assistant state director. Hi, Tim. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, welcome. You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called 3:43 AM, Awakenings of an Experiencer. First of all, I wanted to ask you about these memories you had of when you were lying awake when you were a kid and you had the blanket pulled over your head.
That is one of those memories that I can think about and feel like I'm reliving it. I remember several times it happened the same sort of way. I'd be sitting there in bed trying to go to sleep. And I just would be overcome kind of with this little bit of fear of who knows what. And let me kind of describe our room. We lived in a side-by-side duplex. My brother and I shared a room. We were in the lower level, but there's a portion of it that was above ground level. And we had a little window, not a full size, but kind of half. And that would show out towards the south, kind of over our yard. And so, you know, you'd have typical things coming through at night, like moonlight or things like that. And kind of painting that picture, our room would kind of be partially lit from that, street lights and what have you. So that was kind of normal. But after, you know, I remember that one specific time, a couple of minutes of sitting there, became aware of this presence in my room, and nobody was awake. My brother was asleep. Mom and dad are upstairs or in their bedroom. And I feel this poking, kind of pushing down and feeling like someone was trying to wrap me up. And it kind of started around the hip area and the going down to the feet and then working its way up to my head. And, you know, I'd kind of look, bring that blanket down real quick and look around and nobody's there. And then I bring it back up because I'm so terrified. And again, I'm not hearing anything. There's nothing there visually, not smelling anything. And I remember the memories kind of fade after a while. And, you know, that was something that I remember happening a few times. The other thing I'll add to it is when I was under the blanket, I would notice this very weird, eerie light being brighter than what you would expect coming through the window. It was kind of bluish greenish. Sometimes when I'm remembering it, it was more on the green side. And so that's just something that I remember living with for a long time. And it was funny. I recently got a box of old schoolwork from middle school from my mom. And I had forgotten that I wrote a short story about that experience. And it was really, really detailed. I had put a different character in there, made it a little bit more horror-centric in my school writing. But it was very well described. So then it was like, oh yeah, this really was something that impacted me a lot. Later on, just a few years ago, when I started to kind of delve into this journey of self-discovery of these events, when we were doing some hypnosis sessions, we uncovered kind of the next part of that. And I can talk about that more in a little bit if you'd like. But that is pretty much the conscious memory, the conscious recall of that event.
So I think your brother was in the room with you. Has he ever said that he saw lights or anything? Maybe when he's an adult, he said, yeah, I remember something like that.
You know, it's interesting. We never actually talked about that from my memory, even when we were littler. I just think I was so terrified that the next day I must have forgotten about it or something like that. As an adult, we've never talked about it. He lives in another state, and I don't know why. That'd be a good thing to ask him about. What yeah. I do recall is that he never woke up, and I never tried to, well, I did. If I recall, I was trying to call out for help, and I just could not find my voice. I was so terrified, or I couldn't, maybe somebody was preventing it. So, yeah, we've never talked about it. He's never said anything. And I've asked him about a couple other things, and it seems like he doesn't really remember a lot.
You had nightmares, didn't you? And there's one you call the recurring nightmare of legendary status.
I do. I remember calling it that just because it has been so prevalent when it happened multiple times when I was a kid, and how I can just vividly recall it and picture it in my adult life and writing about the book. What occurred with that? Again, I've had these sort of dreams all my life where they feel ultra realistic, like I'm living through them. And when I wake up, I kind of get momentarily confused as to what was real, what wasn't. So kind of to walk you through this recurring nightmare, I'm in a dark space. We'll put it that way, kind of generally. I can see that my knees are up and bent in the air. There's no clothing on them. And I remember we used to sleep in big t-shirts and just our underwear. So that wasn't, a big surprise, but I can't see the rest of my body. And in this nightmare, I'm looking around. The first thing I notice are these two figures in the dark space that if you were to ask me who they look like, they look just like the Adams family parents, Morticia and Gomez. Morticia was in that sort of black long dress like you would see, and a suit for Gomez. But what was really striking is they just stood there motionless like statues. No emotions. They didn't really have clear features in their face. So I couldn't make out eyes or clear mouths, but they were very pale skinned. And of course, in the dream, I'm starting to feel a little, a little panic, maybe a little fear. Doesn't feel like I can move. And the surface I'm on just feels kind of flat. Nothing specific. Don't really feel cold or heat. And as I'm kind of looking around in my space, down beyond these figures, I can kind of make out a rounded wall. And it looks kind of like a waffle, like a steel structure almost, kind of seams and outcroppings like that. And as that's happening, the next part of the nightmare is there's this really grotesque looking figure that's suddenly leaning down close over me to my right, bald headed, kind of pits for eyes. But again, the features are blurry and not really clear. And I always remember like a hand kind of coming up. I can't make out in the dream just how many fingers there are. But I remember that being something that just in the dream creates a lot of fear and tension. And the next scene of the dream, I'm ignoring whatever's going on there. I'm looking up and there's this metallic device coming down over me. And in my book, I describe it, and there's an illustration in there. It kind of looks like the old style oil applicators with the kind of bulbous base, half sphere, and then a long kind of needle type thing. And there were some intricate workings along that. In the dream, what I think the worst part is everything kind of goes black at that point in the nightmare. but I feel pain in my navel. Sometimes it would be coming from behind, or you know, unfortunately, the part near the groin. And I'd always wake up, and it was always the same, that recurring nightmare. But that recurring nightmare stopped probably when I was 6 or 7, maybe, and never had it again. But it would replay in my mind all the time throughout my life. So that has been a really big part of why I looked into this stuff.
And this image of the Addams Family, do you think they must have kind of picked that out of your subconscious to show you something that might keep you calm?
It's possible. Yeah, I mean, I think anything is possible. In fact, when I started to look into this, I was trying to maybe explore other rational explanations. Maybe as a kid, I saw the movie and it scared me. Well, I researched as much as I could scenes that matched that scene in both films, and I couldn't come up with any that were the same. Like some folks on different platforms might have commented, that other third person was Uncle Fester. I'm like, well, yeah, maybe. But I think that is definitely what occurred, that they were using this sort of ability to mask their images in your mind to at least defer the outright terror of like, oh my God, that's an alien thing for a child, and something strange as they would appear would make more sense if it looked like a, you know, something like a movie you saw, especially the Addams Family. I mean, that's definitely an out there couple of films. I think it's definitely possible.
It's almost like the Addams Family is horror for children.
Yeah. It definitely feels like that. Man, when I look back on the movies that were considered normal and family friendly for us, and I go, wow. You know, I think we all have a little bit of hidden trauma from some of these movies.
The book's called 3:43 AM Awakenings of an Experiencer. What is it about 3:43 AM? What happens?
You said that and asked that question, and I got cold chills right away. So, you know, it's something that is deeply tied to my psyche and emotions. So 3:43 AM. To kind of sum up what that is the number that will live in infamy in my mind for a long time. When my oldest son was born, and I don't necessarily believe he had anything to do with it, it's possible. About three months in, I started to wake up every day at 3:43 a.m. Now, it wasn't like 3:40, sometimes 3:50, and other times are like near that. It was exactly 3:43 a.m. And what I remember is I was not having any dreams prior. When I would wake up, it would be kind of in a state of panic, like something was going on that was wrong. But I, again, had no memories of a dream or nightmares. Zero. It was like I'd go to sleep and instantly wake up at 3:43, kind of like a little bit of elevated heart rate, a little bit of panting. Other times, you know, it'd be more or less just kind of waking up in a general state of dread, but not knowing why. Each of those times, I would have to go like real bad to the bathroom. And I've looked into the medical side of it, and there may be some science to that, but nothing that would explain exactly waking up at 3:43 a.m. every day. And that would continue to happen for months. I lost track of how many days that would be. It got to the point where I would wake up and I'd just be like, yep, here it goes again. And eventually it came to a head. One of these mornings, I came to out of a state of sleep. I knew I was awake because I could kind of hear the sounds of my room, which sounds weird, but I could hear like fans and things like that going on, but I couldn't see. I couldn't move. My eyes were not able to open. And I'm immediately aware of this sort of extremely loud humming sound, and it was kind of like a womp, 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 womp. And I could feel it in my bones. It was like a vibration at the same times. And if I like to describe it, because if anybody's seen the movies, they can understand just how that sound would be to hear and feel and not be able to move. It was like the drone in the Wales Star Trek movie. I think it's The Voyage Home. It was just so crazy how close it was. Of course, I can't see anything, can't move. You're automatically going to be in a heightened state of emotions with that. And within a few seconds time, I believe, I don't know how long it was, I was able to open my eyes, immediately sat up, I think reflexively by instinct, and looked around. The sound is gone. The room is like illuminated in this weird, eerie blue. Now, granted, we did have kind of a bluish paint job in there, but everything was awash in this kind of like weird light blue color. And I try to get my wife's attention because I'm freaking out. I'm panting and just sort of say her name. She doesn't wake up. You know, I look around a little bit more, I think, and touch her, try to get more attention. And she still isn't waking up. Nothing, not even a stirring. And about that time, I'm staring forward, trying to collect myself, and immediately got this sensation that there is something or someone right next to me. So I, again, this is like reflexes of a Neanderthal out in surviving in the wild. Swipe out with my left hand to knock whatever it was away. The wall is only about 3 feet away from where I'm sleeping, maybe 3.5. What I remember was so eerie is feeling this really cold area. And as I look, I see this shadowy shape that didn't have any form kind of melt and flit out our window, which was a little further along the wall. And of course, I look at our clock and it's 3:43 a.m. and just sat there for a while, heart pounding, not knowing what's going on. Get up and go to the bathroom and go back to bed, because what else are you going to do? You know, I got a little guy. We got to get ready for daycare in the morning, got to work. And that's kind of what I talk about a little bit in the book, is like these things happen and you either have to ignore them and move on with your life or find a way to integrate them. So 3:43, the reason I use that as the title for the book is I really believe that was kind of the catalyst for how everything went in my adult life up till now. And it just sort of started this. I could never forget about that. Like, I went many years just kind of relegating the experiences as a small child in the dreams to, you know, those things, whatever, they happened, but, you know, they aren't going to take over my life. But this one, it happened so many times. And a couple other things in and around that, I think that it just impacted me greatly.
So is that what kind of spurred you on to look for hypnotic regression?
Well, I will fully admit, with the onset, birth of our child and having a, I was just out of college, you know, and we kind of trying to maintain a normal life. I really repressed a lot of this or ignored it for many years. What spurred me to look into it more was kind of a few things in different stages. We were living in Rochester, Minnesota, and there was kind of a lull in activity, I would say. But we were at a store, and I was walking past this stand with some marketing material on it. And it was one of those things where you see it and you go, oh my God, what? And something changes in you. It was an image of what we call a typical gray. And it wasn't something that I gradually saw, it just was all of a sudden there. And it triggered some kind of emotional, I'm thinking PTSD response. Again, that happened, tried to ignore it, and went on, moved back to Madison, and had some more events occur And I actually finally reached out to MoveOn and their experience or research team, because I was just finally ready to get some answers and stop dancing around the issue. And through that, kind of did some confirmations with a really great one of their team members, one of their experiencer counselors, and confirming that, yeah, likely I'm an experiencer all my life. And they gave me some next steps, right? And one of them being possibility in looking into the regressive hypnosis. And it ended up being the QHHT stuff pioneered by Dolores Cannon. One of the other things they recommended was an online experiencer group known as Opus, which I did. And that actually opened up a lot of discovery and understanding and kind of truth finding of this stuff. So it was years in the making, and kind of interacting with others in the field, doing some of my own research, and trying to make that step. Like, it was a very big choice, I think, to undergo hypnosis and have the recall of things that may be very disturbing. Like, you know, there's some people that were like, hey, you better be careful, that stuff can get really dangerous for people. But I thought the awareness or truth, so to speak, that I might get out of that would be outweighing any danger. So that's kind of how that kind of got initiated.
Did you go back to that point when you were a kid lying under the blanket and you felt the pressure on there?
Yeah, we did. And it's funny, again, you asked that question, I got cold chills again. Oh. We did go back to that, but it wasn't, I don't think that one was quite as directed. That might have been. We did see kind of what happened there in one of the drawings that I feature in the book. I'll kind of briefly describe as best I can, remembering that, and what maybe you can attest to or sympathize with. That was my first session, and it's so realistic when you're experiencing those things. And I remember my brain was still like, every time I would see an image that was coming to, as far as recovering them, these memories, it would go, now that can't be right in itself. But it was so vivid and clear. So kind of backtracking, where the conscious memory would end of those things poking and prodding in my blanket, this memory picked up. So the first thing I remember in that memory recall is a tapping on my window. And that made me realize that I used to remember a light tapping on my window. And I always thought it was just, my brain was like, it's just the little bush and the wind is picked up. But in the recall through hypnosis, I actually witnessed a three-fingered, light gray, wrinkly, not human entity at the window, tapping on it. I know I already said that. And he had not typical features of what we call grays. He kind of had more of a taller, rectangular head and more, not quite circular, not almond shaped, but almost like rounded rectangles. They're a little rounder in my drawing, but they, of course, feature that really deep, dark black color with a little bit of shininess from the material they must be made out of. And I remember just right after that session, the visual of it, the memory of it just stuck with me. I was able to draw it. And that was a healing moment, I think, being able to do that. There's more to that. After that portion, I'm not sure if he was communicating telepathically, but what occurred in the memory recall through hypnosis, I can't see anything around me. I see black. And then all of a sudden, I see this little shape that's moving, get bigger and bigger in my mind's eye. And it's a ring, a metal ring with sort of beads along the center. And it's kind of oscillating like if it were spinning on a tabletop. And I remember hearing a soft voice say, "Do you like that?" And as a kid, I respond, "Yeah." Like kind of excited and like, "That's fun." And I'm speculating now that must have been just a way to put my mind at ease and get me to a spot where they could do the next thing they did. So that memory scene kind of ends. And the next part I remember, I'm looking my perspective at my feet and they're wrapped up in this blanket that I had in my bed. It was so strange. I remember the little dinosaur pattern, my little feet sticking up, but I'm not walking. I'm not on anything. I get the sensation that I'm just floating in the air at about hip height to a human, and they're pushing me or taking me. I don't remember any hands or anything being on me, but I'm just being guided. What I see in front of me is very, of course, very interesting, very unsettling at the same time. I see a couple of things. There's a figure who seems to be made out of bright light, but with like jagged edges. He's probably about, I don't know, 6 or 7 feet tall, very skinny. And he's got something in his hands that he's working on. It seems to be metallic, some sort of device. And then I look around me and I have 3 or 4 figures. I think it was 2 on each side that were made out of light, but they were shorter. And the 3 of them were similar color to the main figure, but one was like off. I remember thinking that he was off colored and he was like purple and it seemed like a different sort of energy. I was never really given or like recalled why I was seeing them like that in the hypnosis. It's just, that's what I remember seeing. And I drew an illustration of the main guy and myself being floated. Behind him, I remember a very bright light, like a backlit doorway. It had a little arched framework. And again, not real information being given, but just a memory of what I saw. So I'm speculating as me being older, interpreting that, that must have been whatever craft they had. I always thought it was really interesting that I didn't see your typical alien figures. They were light figures, but I believe now that I was somehow seeing their energy of some kind, yet a little bit of their physical shape.
It's weird, just going back a bit, that there seemed like there was an ET at your window tapping on it.
Yeah.
It's like they were trying to get your attention or something, but at the same time, it almost seems like they're blanking your memory out so you don't remember them.
Yeah. I agree. It's weird. And I've had to add to that, like tapping on the window, that seems like almost playful or like being kind of jokesters or pranksters. Like if I remember, like even how I saw him tapping on it was like, "Hey buddy, yeah, you know, I'm out here." There was other things that I have recalled in some other sessions and just either dreams too on top of that, where they kind of are giving off this sort of prankster or trickster sort of vibe to me, at least the ones I've been experiencing things with.
Do you ever remember there was a smell about them?
No, there was no, that's what's interesting. In those early memories and the recall, there was no smell that I can remember or that. And I think I know what you're talking about in some of my own research. There's sometimes a particular smell that people report with them.
Yeah, it's kind of a sulfur or something.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's what it was, sulfur.
Well, I wanted to ask you about another dream.
Yeah.
And yet you say you were observing yourself as a child and was in the presence of what some people say is a mantid type.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it in a cocoon or something?
So it's very possible it could have been. What I remember is just maybe assuming or from the dream, it just seemed like, oh, it's in this exoskeleton suit. I didn't immediately think of cocoon because it seemed to have limbs, or at least spaces where the limbs could go. And it seemed like this mantid, and I only call it that because it had these forearms or smaller limbs that looked like how people either have drawn or written about how mantids look, you know, that kind of folded pincer-like thing. Cocoon probably could be, but I assumed, and it seemed like I was being told that it was a suit of some kind, like a biomechanical thing. What was really weird, I remember it seeming like that the inside of that was lit up or glowing somehow. So the figure itself, the entity coming out of it, seemed to be backlit a lot.
That's weird. It's like the trickster thing you were saying before. It's almost like they're putting on a show for you.
Yeah. It was so interesting because it was like they had, even weirder, was like the background looked like an industrial gangway or walkway where it's like grated metal bits. Like that seemed like, would that really be how advanced extraterrestrial beings would build something? And then just to have it like sitting there on its back, it seemed like, and then coming out of its whatever biomechanical suit. And then I remember, I don't know if I really describe it in the book, but when I remember the dream, it was like I was kind of in the process of running, or my arms were out to the side like, whoa, this is, you know, like a startling sort of stance, and looking down at it. So yeah, I mean, it seemed like it was a display of some kind. Like you said, it's kind of like, hey, look at us.
Do you ever wake up with physical marks on your body?
Not that I know of, not that I'm aware of. There was, so this may be more related to some supernatural, maybe ghost things that have popped up in my more adult life. And this was in the last few years where I actually remember waking up choking and something was around my neck or I couldn't breathe. It was a little bit like when you swallow your spit in the middle of the night and you're like gagging on that. But I felt something on my throat and I looked in the mirror and I had marks on my throat, like something had bruised it. Now that I don't have any inclination to believe that was ET related, because I was struggling with some other more paranormal stuff after my dad passed. I will say though that around that time that I was waking up, not long after my son was born, I had some other interesting things happen. I had these blisters, this swath of blisters on my thigh up near my hip. And they were super itchy, super painful. Went to the doctor and he said it was shingles. And I'm like, what? And, you know, when I asked, like, well, how the heck does that even happen? And they said, well, it could be stress induced. I'm like, okay. So I kind of put that on my mind, but I remember that being around that time frame of waking up all the time and at 3:43 a.m. The only other thing I can describe is I've had this kind of lumpy scar on my left thigh as well that has never gone away, but it doesn't tie into any of those dreams or memories or experiences that I know of.
And is there something with your nose as well? And that came up during the hypnotic regression, some discussion about that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So in the hypnotic regression, one of the scenes, it wasn't the first one. I did like four, I think. We asked about that. And I remember being, you know, in the somewhere being worked on. You know, with this, it kind of is all hazy sometimes. And I remember seeing this device that was coming straight at me. It was squarish. It had this blue energy. I remember including a sketch of it in the book. And they direct this energy into my face near the nasal passages. And I remember hearing a large pop. Now, how that kind of ties into childhood, I always remember having a lot of bloody noses randomly all the time. Happened at school, happened at home, and they'd be pretty voluminous, I would say, with blood. And then I also remember always feeling that I know medically they call it the septum, but the middle part of your nose was always pushed hard way to the left of my nasal cavity. And I'd always have trouble with that. And come to find out, I was getting some imaging done for unrelated things, and a CT scan, I think it was, or an MRI, showed that I have a very, very, very deviated septum, and they said I had a bone spur. And the doctors asked me if I ever broke my nose that I know of. And I said, nope, don't know. I mean, I was a normal kid for the most part, playing ball, got hit in the face with a soccer ball once, but as far as I know, I never broke it. And what's interesting is it almost looks like something went in there and pushed the bone to the side, and maybe something was in there. I don't know. But yeah, so that was interesting, and kind of a follow-up to that. I know I have some experiencer friends, and this is really funny. It's 3:43 right now as I'm looking at my clock. Just have to mention that. That's funny. I was asking her about it too, and she has some abilities, and she asked what that was all about, and she said that she got a response telepathically that they were experimenting in some ways. I guess that's kind of obvious at this point, and trying to see if, you know, I can manage with one nasal passage or in one nasal cavity or whatever. So yeah, it's all been very piecemeal, you know, like lots of little different things that it's not all been just one clear picture that I've been piecing together.
Can you tell us what it was like when you were working for MUFON and you were doing field investigations?
Absolutely. I was overjoyed to begin that process. There, it was really, really interesting just to get into that field. Like, you know, I was always interested in this and always wanted to kind of explore the phenomenon more. And this was just like the perfect match as far as doing this. You know, you do it in your free time. You don't get paid. I mean, it's definitely a hobby thing. It's a passion project that you need to do. I really enjoyed the most helping people make sense of what they saw. And there were some cases where we were able to identify it as a normal thing, like a plane. I think I will just say, United Airlines, please stop painting your planes white with a blue tail fin. Everybody thinks they're a Tic Tac UFO. That was one. But the guy was just so thankful that we could work through that and figure out that's what it was. He didn't want to live with the stigma of not knowing what he saw. And I think just that social aspect of helping people was the best part of it. I also really enjoyed the data side of it, digging into, you know, MUFON's database. And I did a presentation at our local library about kind of ufology and stuff like that. It definitely helped me more on the more academic side of the phenomenon, getting more knowledge that way. Made some good connections as far as within MUFON and in the community, sometimes having to reach out for UFO reports to local law enforcement. You'd be surprised, I think, how many individuals were actually supportive and saying, you know, like, even though we didn't have a record for you, good luck in your search. I hope it turns out I kind of read between the lines. I know they can't say a lot all the times, but there were some that were like, oh yeah, this person really is aware of the stuff and supportive. So that was really cool. Doing a couple Freedom of Information Acts, getting experience doing that was really interesting. Getting the material in the mail to review after that was like, well, this is for real, man. I'm researching stuff. Unfortunately, that didn't really help us with much in that particular case, but that was okay. I think it was a great experience. And I think also learning kind of more Wisconsin-based lore from people are like, yeah, hey, here's my report, but people see this stuff a lot and, you know, maybe not knowing about that stuff prior and learning about it, like the Great Lakes, Lake Michigan, there's definitely some history of orange orbs coming in and out of that body of water that people report. And I may or may not have gotten one related to that. And then there were some that were really interesting. And I'll try to not ramble on too long about these things because it was very interesting and I could. So there's two aspects. There was only a couple that reported entities that they saw. And what always got me was like, they're all gung-ho about putting a report in. I would follow up and then nothing. Like one person was very concerned that he thought they saw, you know, what we hear known as reptilians in one of the cities, I think it was Eau Claire, and was just like very upset about it and like really wanted somebody to look into it. But then there's no response, you know, try an email, try a cell phone. And those ones always leave you wondering. You can't do much with them. And then there was another one from up north. And this sort of ties into the other interest I have, which is, you know, cryptids and cryptozoology and entities involved in these sightings. This person had this great story about seeing, well, it wasn't great for him and his friend. They were terrified, but it was just very interesting. He had an illustration and talked about when they were camping outside by his parents' home, they heard this crashing through the trees and they saw this huge creature. They were terrified, of course, ran inside, and then, you know, it left, but then shared that there was some news article about this. Of course, I'm following up and you're trying to determine if it's worth more investigation or not. Well, with some of these cases, when I was speaking with people, and there's another one on the Lake Michigan coast where I'm looking into it, talking to the person, looking at where they live, they just sometimes gave me this impression that they weren't really who they were. Maybe, and of course, this is where your imagination goes wild. They just had a way about them that made it seem like they were submitting these reports and trying to get maybe less scrupulous investigators to blow them up and like say, wow, look at this. And this wild encounter is whatever. I always wondered if they were maybe people hired to do that or trying to do that. Like, I remember speaking with this one lady who just gave off this vibe as being very composed and scripted in her responses. And when I looked up where she lived and had this sighting, it looked like it was like a model home. It didn't even look like a real one. So, you know, did that for a few years, actually became their assistant state director, which was more a lack of other staff, but it was also because I was doing a lot of work and doing well, and the director of investigations moved me up to that position. Unfortunately, not long after that, I started to have these a series of very unfortunate events as far as medical things go, and had to move out of that because it was just too much for me to keep up with. As far as fielding reports, following up on them, filling them out, and closing them out, you know, it became a lot of work for me personally. I'm better now. I probably could handle it, and been thinking about getting back into it. But I do remember towards the end there were so many reports with so little information that there was just no way to do anything with. And you still have to fill in all the other parts of the data, like weather, location, any other possible related events. And it was just so much time and so many reports like that, that it was just too much for me to handle. But again, if anybody has the interest and time, I would highly recommend doing that as a really neat life experience. And towards the end, before I called it quits, I was actually really interested in joining their experience or research team, where so people who submit reports on UFO sightings would get just a standard field investigator to follow up, take the info, write a report. Maybe it was around the time of the pandemic, right? And very much against going on site to investigate things. So we didn't do that often, but when you got to abduction possibilities and entities, the case would be given over to the experience or research team. And I was really interested in helping people through those and began the process of joining that team. But ultimately, I left and did not do that.
And you talked there about possible witnesses that seem to be trying to trick you in some way or putting in fake reports.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some times you were on the phone and you heard noises that sound like somebody was tapping the phone?
It's so interesting you say that. I don't recall that any time with MUFON work. Now, a lot of it was email based, and sometimes that made me wonder. Like I said, with the lady, it was more how she spoke, and it didn't seem natural. It seemed like somebody acting the part of a witness. She was just too composed. But I will say, what you describe, what you talk about, I remember shortly after those nights waking up at 3:43 a.m. I remember in particular, I was talking to my brother actually about it on our cell phone. He was, again, in another location, I think out of state. And I remember hearing it, like the clicking. I remember it sounding exactly like we used to have a landline with a couple phones, and you could pick up and listen in on somebody else's conversation. And that sound of the receiver being activated was like that little click, like we talked about being tapped. And I remember asking my brother, did you hear that? And I don't think he did, but it always made me wonder, always, about that.
So there's another incident I want to ask you about. There was a point, I think you say you were brought back by the ETs, and you were on your driveway and you mm-hmm. saw a neighbor.
Yeah. So that was also part of that. I believe I was seeing me coming back from that other event. And what's so interesting about that is I don't really talk about it a lot to the hypnotherapist, but it was in there. I remember looking up, I'm on my driveway, and what I'm seeing is the sky in like this kaleidoscopic, multicolored light show going on. And in the center is this little black star shape. Like, it wasn't quite exactly a star. It had the workings of the points, but they were kind of twisting and melting into the different colors. And it was slightly moving left and right and like around my field of view as I'm looking up, but it was also spinning on that, on its axis. What I assumed it was the craft leaving up in the sky. And there's a couple aspects to this that really stand out. I described that to the Opus group that I was part of, and others pinged on that right away. They said, oh my God, that's what I saw in the sky too. So I ended up doing an animation of that that I have on one of my websites. Then, after I'm seeing that, I look over and I know it's somewhere near our house and like the driveway, because I recognize the scenery, there's trees, and then part of the carport that we had. And I see this girl in a long nightgown get up, long brown hair. She has this stuffy that had long ears. It was brown and was furry, looked like a rabbit to me. She runs off into the night going to her house. I was 99% sure that was my neighbor that I grew up next to for many, many, many years. And it wasn't until I wrote the book, I was in the process of writing, I reached out to her on Facebook. We've been friends for a while. We hardly ever talked. And I asked her if she ever remembered weird things happening, kind of leaving it open-ended. I didn't really want to lead her, but I also asked her specifically if she ever had a stuffy matching that description. And I about fell out of my chair when she responded and said, "Oh my gosh, yes, I had that and I brought it everywhere with me." Conscious memory, I have never, ever remembered her having it. This was memory from the recall. And she confirmed that detail, which just, you know, to me, finally cemented, I think, everything in together that this stuff is for real. And this hypnosis can be a great tool to recover these memories. What was further about that, I would say, is she then went on to say how she's known about herself being a what they call starseed or a star child, and has had multiple other experiences of her own, and also commented about how she has that, I think, rare blood type that sometimes is associated with experiencers. I can't remember exactly what it is. Maybe R positive or negative? Maybe you know, but yeah, that was also another insane recall from hypnosis.
Did you get the feeling that she had been brought back at the same time as you, or that she just happened to be outside?
No, she got up from a like a laying down position, just like me, and she wasn't that far away. But I've always felt that she was there with me and brought back at the same time, which would make sense. In a way, I always felt oddly connected to her growing up. Now, both our families struggled with some issues as far as, like, my parents got divorced, and her family life sometimes, I mean, right along ours, wasn't stable. I always felt for her, and we would often comfort one another as kids do. You know, we go outside and play. We didn't have social media and tablets, so where else do you go? Outside and play. And we did that a lot. But that memory often makes me wonder what more maybe happened to us if we were up there together. Did we know that? Who knows? But I believe that was us coming back together.
Have you had other times where you've woken up outside?
Not consciously, but I will say there has been other blips of fragments of memories that indicate that I was outside and didn't know how I got there. One of them being this, and this was a conscious memory that broke through somehow. Wasn't part of a hypnosis recall, wasn't part of a dream, but it was during that time when I was waking up at 3:43 a.m., we lived right next to the Madison Truex Airport, like 2 miles away. And I remember being in a very recognizable space, looking up like I'm laying down, and I'm seeing this Black Hawk helicopter slowly flying over me, like the memory is in slow-mo, or they're going slow. And it was like, I don't know, just above the tree line flying over me. Now, because we live in the area and my brother and I always were into military stuff, I knew what a Black Hawk looks like from prior to that. That's just something that's always stuck out to me. Like, it's always like a photographic or video memory. I can never get that in my head. There was one other time in a I think it was a hypnosis session where I remember being a child and just all of a sudden being aware that I'm alone in some green pasture and I was running to go find my mom. Make of that what you will, but I think there has been other times that I haven't even discovered yet where that may be the case.
Well, it's been great talking to you.
Well, thank you. You too.
The book's called 3:43 AM, Awakenings of an Experiencer. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, yes. And I did want to share real quick. I am making some revisions to it and hopefully adding some new content. And maybe this summer or late spring, I'll have a revised edition.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, so I kind of threw this up there on my, I was an artist as well. So it's Kaney Creative, K-A-N-E-Y, Creative, K with a K, K-R-E-A-T-I-V-E.com. And that's kind of where you can view some of my art. And there's a link to the author stuff in the book.
Great. Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It really was an honor.
And that was an interview with Tim Kaney about his book, 3:43 AM, Awakenings of an Experiencer, a memoir of high strangeness, synchronicities, past lives, and otherworldly contact. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFOpodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.